Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Lloyd Thompson, who is a fractional chief operations officer for small business owners, essentially helping them get out of the day-to-day. Welcome, Lloyd.
Hi, welcome, Tom. Welcome myself to your show. Good to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
Pleasure to have you. So I know it's late there in Sydney. But why don't you give us a bit of a background as to who you are and what you do and kind of how you got here?
Yeah, so my business is Virtual DOO. The DOO actually stands for Director of Operations. And if I was able to get the domain name now, it would have been Virtual COO. And basically what we do is we help busy business owners with teams, typically 5 to 25 staff, get out of the day-to-day operations. And how we do that is provide them with a fractional operator. So it's not full-time, it's a part-time person who's on a month-to-month basis who can look into their business and go, okay, how do we resolve operational chaos? What's the founder doing? How do we get them out of that? And I've been running this now for about 4 years, and we have operators across UK, Australia, and the US.
Brilliant. Okay, so just to contextualize it all and give us a bit of an idea of how that would fit into a business, do you have any examples of any clients you've worked with recently where,
Yeah. So most of my clients have been in the e-com and marketing space. And that doesn't mean that we're restricted to work with those. It's just how my business started. My first client was an e-commerce business. And the founder was stuck in the weeds, scattergunning the team with tasks, and really didn't know any other way. And he was highly creative. And what he really needed is some way to extract him out of that and bring in order. And how is he going to delegate these things off his plate? How is he going to make things more autonomous and not so dependent on him? And so that was our first client. And then that led to referrals with similar clients. And the thing is, e-coms work with marketing agencies work with e-coms. And so they've been bread and butter clients for us, but it really doesn't need to be so specific into an industry. In fact, in Australia at the moment, we've got a business that does rope access. You know, these are folks that install glass plating in buildings. And so you think, how on earth there's a virtual online operator or a general manager or COO manage a business like that? Well, the core team are able to be run remotely and online. The folks out of the field, you know, they're checking in, but they're not, they're not there on Slack running, communicating with the team frequently. They're out there doing jobs, but someone who's, it doesn't matter if the person's in a physical office or remote. So, yeah, that's how we've evolved, marketing agencies and e-com, but then we've had a real pick and mix of clients on the way. And the typical pains have been there's someone that's stuck in the day-to-day operations, there may be operational chaos. And now in terms of the last couple of years, we've found that business owners who are looking at exiting have been folks that have engaged us because of some of the communities we've worked with. And really that's because in order to exit your business and sell, then it really can't be you that's running everything. And so it leads us back to the first point about helping a busy business owner get out of the day-to-day.
That's really interesting that they come to you as they're approaching that exit. Obviously, they have a light bulb moment when they realize that their business actually isn't going to be that attractive to a potential buyer if it's fully dependent on them in the operations from the operational things.
That's going to really affect the sale price of a business if it's you. I mean, no one wants to buy a business and buy a job. They want to buy a business as an investment. And I think some of the people that have come to us, well, actually the people that have come to us who want to exit have come to us through people who do exit facilitation and coaching. And then when it comes to it, they go, okay, well, perhaps we can use an implementer, and that's us, and we're actually someone who's not there just to coach as such, we're there to do it. Or we'll come in and be a one person who's between the founder and the team and help extract that founder out of the day-to-day operations.
That sounds really effective. And what exactly do you do? So say, you know, perhaps an example with a particular industry to work with.
So our engagements start with an operations assessment or audit. I think operations assessment sounds a bit more pleasant. I think people put their guard up when they hear audit. And that allows us to have a look for all of the opportunities in the business that would result. So it's like really build our issues list, but also tell the founder, like, hey, we're seeing these things. This is what we would actually do about it. And so this is team and system set up. And just to give you a flavor, I mean, there's a whole load of stuff. We're going to look at, I think some people think this is the warm, fluffy in first, but we look at vision and values. And the thing is, if you don't know the vision of the founder, how are you going to help them get there? So you need to know that. The values, this is going to be used for building the culture of the business. You're going to need it for performance management. You're going to need it for hiring, fire, and firing. You need to know who's accountable for what, so that structures. And quite a lot of the time, this stuff is missing. They're having problems holding people accountable because they don't have these structures in place. And then it gets to things like rhythms, dashboards, and feedback loops. So like, what are the core rhythms or meetings that run the business? Are they efficient? Are some of them pointless? Do we need to have this meeting? Or are there some regular rhythms that could be there that would make everything run smoothly? And so we would advise them on that. Dashboards, you in your space would know a lot about dashboards. And so we want to make sure that there are numbers that are going to give us the pulse and health of the business, and not just financial. It might be marketing numbers, like how many appointments have been set up. It might be incidents coming out of IT. So what are the metrics that run the business? Feedback loops from campaigns or any kind of incident, like how are we making sure that we're constantly improving our business? And then just a final point is we also do a thing called RevOps, which is a little bit different to everything else I've said, but this is where we can look in the CRM of that business and see if there are money-making opportunities there to help them. So sometimes we see that, and if we can help them go, you know what, you're not emailing these folks regularly, or you're not following, or there's not a proper sales and marketing process where these two are working together, then we can quite quickly pay for ourselves by making a few simple changes to the business. So that's something we got into about 2 years ago.
So it's pretty comprehensive in terms of what you do. You touched on dashboards there, and yeah, you're right, I love a dashboard too. What do you like to put on your dashboard?
I mean, it really depends on the business, and there's not like a specific gospel of things that you're going to put on the same for every single business. You're going to look and say, what are the makeups of the team, and what are the important things to measure for this business? So this is the art of really choosing KPIs or measurables, as I like to put it, such that you want to make sure that you're measuring the right thing, because if you measure the wrong thing, you're going to reward the wrong thing and you're going to get undesired behavior. So the classic example I gave earlier is, if it was marketing, for example, you might measure that with number of appointments that marketing are putting in each week, right? What number of appointments have been found by marketing and have been booked for sales to run. And then sales might have a measurable, which is number of those appointments that have resulted in closed business, for an example. But then if you've got a warehouse, you'd have metrics around that. If you've got invoice payable and receivable, it might be amount of time you're going to have to turn around an invoice, or if in your warehouse, it's like how long are you spending doing returns. So we'll have worked with, certainly if we look to e-commerce, we'll have a number of things that we've already done before, and we go, oh, well, I wonder if this makes sense for this business. But we don't just copy it across and go, yeah, let's just use this. We really want to understand we are measuring the right thing. And I don't know if you've heard the classic story is the Cobra effect, where have you heard this one?
I haven't.
Okay. A very, very short story is the when the English colonized India, they put out a bounty, if you like, on if you caught a cobra and killed it, you would get a reward for it. And so the intention was, you know, stop the outbreak of cobras. But what actually happened is people started breeding cobras and releasing them. So that's just the point of that is you've got to be really careful about what you're measuring so that you reward the right behavior. And so when I say dashboards, it doesn't need to be some complex Power BI dashboard or something like that. It simply starts for many businesses as a spreadsheet with a number of numbers that you look at regularly and know when it's green is good, when it's red, it's not so good. And does red mean that we now need to do something? And then that's the task of the operator, as I call them, to work with the team to understand what needs to be done to make that red or green.
That's interesting that you highlighted those points, and I completely agree. From my financial side, I break them down into, we start with the critical four, so revenue, gross profit, net profit, cash. And then we break those down into, I call them the 16 drivers, but you can split them into fewer than that if you want. And as you said, it starts with just tracking those numbers in a very simple format, just on a basic Google Docs or Google Sheets. And then every month, just coming in and reviewing them and going red, amber, green across each of them.
Yeah.
Our attention on. And yeah, obviously you can break that down into various different areas, depending on the business, depending on the product lines, depending on the industry. But fundamentally, it can start with the basics. I think a lot of concerns just aren't even tracking the basics, the critical four: revenue, gross profit, net profit, cash. So you can start there pretty easily.
Yeah, and I mean, when we're building up a dashboard, we're not expecting to start and it be complete. You know, we'll start and evolve it over time, and then it's, as you said, it's not a huge investment to start either. It's just a spreadsheet. And in fact, I've found other people have built quite expensive, unnecessary systems to do this, when a Google Sheet can go a long way. And even if you want to get fancy, you can do a Google Sheet with some automations to pull the data out of somewhere to save someone putting it in there. So yeah, simply just getting some metrics into a central place for key people to look at goes a long way.
Yeah. And the other thing that you mentioned, which I agree is really important, is kind of the accountability chart. So when we have, when we identify things that need to be worked on, essentially who's responsible for it and who's accountable, and having that documented clearly in a place that everyone can see, I think is really important as well. So
yeah, that's a really early artifact for us, because I think quite often the founder is reluctant to let go because they feel that if they do let go, then it's all going to fall apart. And to be honest, if it's not done properly, that's correct, it will. But on the other side of that fence, it's because perhaps it's not being clear who owns what and making it clear who is accountable for what, such that two people aren't trying to chase after the same thing, or the ball gets kicked somewhere and nobody takes control of it, is really important. And so that's one of the very early things we do. And then, as I spoke earlier about that operational health assessment we do, we're looking for gaps like that. And that's where we recommend, well, okay, you need an accountability chart. This is what we're seeing that you currently have. And then we can advise them on how we might change that in the future if they want to go with that. And so that's why we start with the assessment, find all the opportunities. And then if they want to go further and they say, yeah, okay, go resolve all those things, then they can either do it themselves or get us in to do it for them.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty similar approach that I take on the exit side of things for the business owners that I like to exit, is doing that assessment first, kind of uncovering what needs to be focused on. And then, you know, the business owner can either go and do it themselves and they've got everything there to do it, or they can get some support with it.
You know, a thing I like about that approach as well is that for me, when I started this business, it was me doing everything and I was a fractional across three, and now I've got a team. But one of the things that I found is if I do the audit, the person who does the audit, or shall I say ops assessment, is the person who would do the remediation. So they also get to find, okay, what's it like to work with this person? So they get that, is this going to be, are my team going to gel with this person? Is this the right culture fit? And so I think starting with an ops assessment or audit for a business for so many types of B2B services really does make sense.
Absolutely. And so what are the main kind of problems or challenges that you face on that exit side of things? What are the things that business owners perhaps struggle to let go of most, or that they can't delegate?
I think it starts with almost like, if it's a really clear like, oh, this is, these are a number of things that my VA is going to run, and they're like procedural things that have been built up over time, like basic administration, then that's normally let go pretty well. But the things that's a struggle for business owners to let go of is decision making. And that's because they've been delegating tasks, which I wouldn't really say is delegating. They've just been handing off task, but they've not been handing off ownership of a particular area. So I've got to say, I'm guilty of this myself. I run marketing in my own business. I'm currently, I wouldn't say I'm, I don't have the scale yet to have a big third party marketer. But if I thought, wow, okay, now is the time, I would get a marketer in to run this. So I find a lot of businesses, they'll hold marketing and sales until last, particularly sales. So I see sales is probably the last thing that they will let go of. Marketing's probably second to last. But as a general comment across the industry, it's just decision making. And that's because accountabilities have not been clear. And once they've cleared up that accountability and then started to build up trust, and that's a two-way thing. So you don't just say, here it is, it's yours, over to you, take care. Mm-hmm. I normally do it such that give them a bit of responsibility and say, okay, what would you do in this scenario? Okay, cool. And then just start zooming out and zooming out, giving them more and more range. And sometimes it starts with a financial side. So you might say, okay, you've got, if the result of the decision is going to be less than $1,000 of spend in a month, just go do it, you know, or if the impact. So, and then you can zoom out further and further and further.
That's really interesting. I think, yeah, you mentioned sales, but also the thing that sprung to my mind, and this is something actually I was on a podcast recently and I talked about this, was key client relationships being dependent on the owner. And I think that's quite a difficult one to onto the team, especially if, you know, the ongoing business is dependent on that relationship that the business has with that person. And with some of these small businesses, and I'm generalizing here, it does vary massively from sector to sector, but you could see client concentration where you've got a few clients that make up a significant portion of revenue, and those relationships are dependent on the business owner's relationships with those other businesses.
Yeah.
Do you address those sorts of issues?
Yeah. So another thing that we would do there, I mean, we would do general hiring, you know, so if we see in the structure, okay, you could put an account manager in here. And that's, you know, if we get advice from the CFO, quite often with the businesses that we work with, they would have a fractional CFO. If we get advice like, okay, it's looking like we've got a budget for this, then perhaps you could start moving work over to an account manager. Now, I should say about how we work, we're normally internally facing. So we would normally, in our business, we're going to run the internal team and the vendors. We're not going to be talking to the clients directly. So if we were to see that founder is talking to outside clients a lot and they've got budget, then I think an account manager is a really good way to go. And that does, it's obviously a lot easier when you've got new clients to introduce the new clients to the new account manager and then take it from there. But when you've got existing clients, that's a bit harder. But actually, I had a friend who runs a fractional account management business, funnily enough, and I was asking her about this, like, how does that handoff work for existing clients? And they say, well, they introduce a person who as that account manager who actually tends to respond faster. And it might be the business owner in the back end helping them in the beginning, but they start getting more comfortable with that a new account manager and go, okay, wow, this is brilliant. And then that's how that transition occurs. So that's a long-winded answer to tell you. We will make a general look at the structure and how problems have been solved in the past. And then for your example of, say, how working with external businesses where it's that B2B-like business, then you know, we could look to hire someone who could solve that problem, like an account manager.
It sounds like a pretty effective approach. So yeah. You've got people all over the world now. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a small business. There's only a handful of us, but we're global. So I've got quite a bit of an odd day in that I start my day, I have calls with the US East Coast, and then there's a time and I catch up with Australia in the morning where I am. And then there's a quiet period in the middle of the day. And if I'm lucky, I'll go out surfing. And then suddenly I've got calls in the evening, stuff happening again. So this is the modern world we live in. But on the flip side of that, me and my team all work flexibly and remotely. And it's a great, and I can work from anywhere. It's a great deal of freedom. So can everyone in the business, as long as we can service the time zone of the business that we're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for anyone who's listened to this and thought, you know, perhaps the things that you've said have resonated with them, or they think they need to have a chat, your process, you've touched on it briefly. So you start with the audit, and then you essentially explain what's going to happen. Perhaps you can run through that in a bit of detail.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Yeah, so it's a one and done audit or assessment, and that's where we're going to look at the team and systems. And broadly how that works is we're going to be asking the founder about their vision, values, accountability, and the number of things we talked about earlier, their systems and their view and their challenges. And we're also going to interview sort of their main touch points. Where are they involved? And we're going to look at the systems that they interact with, and we're going to understand their pains and their challenges. And we've got a number of things that we're checking out for and looking for, but broadly it's teams and systems and those things I talked about. And every week for a month, we play back to the founder what we're seeing, and we play back, these are the opportunities that we're seeing. This is what you would actually do about it. And then they get a bit of a choose their own adventure, because in a business, you've got such a broad amount of space that you can cover. So when I say choose your own adventure, they might say, oh, look, I know about that. Not too worried about that. But this area over here, that's really interesting. Can you zoom in a bit more in that during your time here? And so then what that means is the founder doesn't really have any surprises at the end of that month. We play back all of these findings prioritized by effort and impact. So if it's a low effort, high impact item, that's priority number one. And then we say, look, this is what we would do about it. And then they have a choice. Like, do they want to fix it in-house themselves, engage another partner, or hopefully go, you know what, I know you can solve this, you do it. And then what happens is we then come in on a month-to-month basis and just go through that list, get through it. Now, that's really a starting point. So from the sense that if they choose to engage us, that's the starting priority list. But the founder might get into week one and go, oh, you know what, this is other thing that could you handle this and run this with the team? Then we just jump onto that. Like we can come to them and say, hey, this is what we think the priorities are. These are the reds that we're seeing come out of the team right now, and these are the things we'd like to address. But once we're started, the founder can choose, or we can just go with whatever we're recommending at the time by what we're seeing at the pains of the business. And because it's month to month, we're effectively judged every month by how much value we're creating. And if we're creating value each month, we carry on. It's a very, very simple model. And what it usually finishes with is either someone in the team is able to see the rhythms and the dashboards and the feedback loops that we've put in, and we see that they've got capability and they want to do it, and we'll train them up to replace us. So ultimately, we'll look to make ourselves redundant. Or they have now got budget for a full-time operator, be that a COO, general manager, director of operations, a one person between the founder and the team. And they go, yeah, okay, I've now got budget for that kind of person. And we can even help them in the hiring process for that. And then we'll give them a seamless handover and bow out and ask them for some referrals.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I love the model there, and not too dissimilar to the way I work with my clients. Well, we'll make it very easy for anyone to get in touch with you, and we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes and anything else that you want to share. But yeah, pleasure to have you on, Lloyd. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Great to be here, Tom.
Thanks. We'll talk soon.
Talk soon. Thanks again.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co, and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.